Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton, a writer and social media activist from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate from Kensington, Maryland.
Hi, I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and a musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuzak, a teacher and a former political activist from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And as we tape this, it is a Sunday evening, a couple of days before the State of the Union address. But we're going to talk about that later, because that's kind of like in the future, and gosh only knows what will happen to the world between now and then. Trump was in Davos this week, Melania was in D.C., and Stormy Daniels is going to be on the Jimmy Kimmel Show on Tuesday night. What's the biggest story here?
Well, let's talk about Davos for a second, because the theme of Trump for the past year has been America first, America first, and America first. And he walked in fresh off the tariffs of the solar panels and washing machines. And he pretty much continued with his America first statements. And he pretty much said, if America grows, the world grows. It was his same statement that he's been saying over and over. And it actually kind of worked. People were not saying this is all that bad. In fact, a lot of countries were like, pick me to be in line for better trade deals with you guys.
You're saying this was a successful trip for the president?
As far as economically, it wasn't the worst trip.
I suppose.
Now, wait, he did get booed when he did mention, you know, fake news. And I mean, but if we look at this fairly, he did and yes, he still did get in trouble with he had to discuss he had to meet with the prime minister or president of Rwanda, but overall, it wasn't his worst meeting, and he has a low bar for these things. What did you think, DJ?
Well, I think the reason he was so well received was because he actually departed from his standard nonsense. When he went to Davos, he said America first does not mean America alone. We are open for trade deals with other countries. He even talked about the possibility of returning to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was finalized with the other 11 nations earlier this week, saying something about how it had to be fair for all, and nobody really knew what he meant. It was a standard Trump speech when Trump doesn't ad-lib.
Well, and also, he wasn't catering to his American base there. He wasn't trying to get ratings or have people chanting build the wall in a stadium. He was talking to other billionaires. So he was trying to talk like a billionaire as opposed to trying to, you know, spike ratings on The Apprentice or whatever it is he does whenever he hits up Twitter.
Walk like an Egyptian, talk like a billionaire.
To be fair, let's be clear. He is a billionaire. I mean, so when you say...
Let's be clear. I mean, he may be a billionaire.
Let's be clear. He is a billionaire as far as we know. I mean, he's got solid...
Never seen his taxes.
Toilets.
Hey, if he releases his tax returns, maybe we would know for sure.
Maybe we would know for sure. But I mean, this is his bag. I mean, this is his bread and butter when he talks to investors and his things like this. This is kind of what he does. And to be quite honest, this is why, what was it, like 49% of the country voted for him?
46.
46. Thank you.
She got 48. He got 46.
Yeah. But even still, that was the Trump that we wanted. And I have said this from the beginning. Never cared for him. I do not like him. But if he pulls this off, if he is a successful president, if he does make America great, not America great again, but if he pulls this off, I will be the first one to eat crow.
But what is your criteria for pulling this off? What is this? One good foreign appearance?
I'm talking about,
one good State of the Union?
No, of course not. But once again, he's only 1 year in. He's still, in my opinion, and we've talked about this before, I still think he's coasting off the Obama administration's economic...
There's no doubt. Yeah.
There's no doubt. I mean, we'll say that incredulously. There's no doubt. But this is about the time, 12 to 18 months, this is where he comes into his own. And what he did in Davos, no ad-libbing. No, he didn't push any foreign dignitaries over. Do I have to say, like, he didn't screw up?
Something tells me you're just trying to be kind to Trump this week.
Yeah, but he's back in the States, and this morning...
Maybe they got to me. I don't know.
This morning he was on Twitter yelling at Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Like, he was yelling at Jay-Z on Twitter on the morning of the Grammys. So, you know, the Trump we all know and follow on Twitter isn't too far below the surface, even when he's walking around being Mr. Billionaire.
What was he yelling at Jay-Z about?
He was taking credit for the unemployment rate among African Americans. Because
being
Van
at
Jones
the lowest
asked...
point in, like, you know, 17 years.
Right. 20, actually.
And what Van Jones blatantly asked Jay-Z today was, or yesterday, I'm not sure when it aired, was, do you think that, is this okay if he talks this way, the shithole comments, but he's still improving things economically for African Americans and others, is that okay? And Jay-Z's response was, no, you've got to treat people like human beings. This isn't about money. It's about how we treat each other.
Right. But the second part of Jay-Z's answer was, that for too long, the Democrat, and I'm agreeing with Jay-Z on this one. The second part was that for too long, the African-American community has gone along with the Democratic Party, which has not fulfilled their responsibilities to minorities in this country. And we should have done more for economic and all sorts of other, and immigration, and we should have fixed these problems. And that's a shortcoming on my party and things that I feel responsible for. And he's absolutely correct. And this is why Jay-Z's awesome.
Yeah, no, Jay-Z's not stupid.
He's
an observant
he's
man.
Awesome.
And in my defense, I was watching the clips, so I didn't see the whole interview.
Oh, the
so
whole
I didn't hear that.
Awesome.
I didn't hear
Watch
that second
it.
Half.
Yeah, which is why, you know, Jay-Z's awesome.
Yeah.
let's I don't
which
think
that's why he's at the Grammys tonight
that.
And I'm recording from my basement.
And whether Donald Trump is taking credit. He is right, though. Right now, black unemployment is at its lowest. You know, he didn't, and you know, he's got a point there. So
okay, Mr. Krauthammer. But, well, let's move on to.
I'm that guy now. I'm your conservative in this group.
To the
Look
Robert Mueller investigation, and specifically to the salacious tidbit that dropped a few days ago that Trump apparently, and I believe it's true, tried to fire or ordered Robert Mueller fired this past June, only to be stopped by his attorney. Do you guys believe it? And if so, does it mean anything?
Not his attorney. It was the White House counsel, which is not the same thing, although Trump likes to think it is.
Thank you. Correct.
Who threatened to resign rather than go through with this, and that's what got Trump to back down. The part that of all of the things that came out of this, the wonderful farce of Sean Hannity at 9 a.m.
Oh my God!
Insisting
that this was a lie
and that this was fake news, and then within 20 minutes having it confirmed by Fox News that yes, indeed, Trump did try to fire Mueller, and then doing Hannity did a complete 180. He did a complete 180 and said, well, yes, okay, it really happened, but he has ever, you know, and then he did whatever other defense he came up with. I thought that was
and
particularly
then cut to
amusing.
A car chase. That was the best thing ever. He was really, look over here. Okay, so he tried to fire the special counsel, but, you know, he's kind of allowed in car chase. It was it was wonderful.
Yeah. I just would have loved to have been in the meeting that they have post-show to see whether there was any self-awareness of that. Like if they said, gee, that was kind of funny the way you tried to save that, Sean. And he goes, yeah, well, what could I do? I mean, I go on the air, you know, with a script, and then in the middle of my show, I'm getting reports in my headset. What can I do? I would respect the man if at least I knew that he did that after the show. Although I'm not sure that he did that.
Well, was that the night that his Twitter account then went offline and he lost his mind?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, he said he spent the whole night trying to figure out why his Twitter account had gone offline and was tweeting things the next day of, I will not be silenced. It's like, dude, you have a TV show. Your Twitter account doesn't seem that important.
I was going to say, putting aside Sean Hannity trying to do the dead cat strategy without an actual dead cat. The first question is, why is this coming out now, considering that it happened in June? And the best theory I have for that is Bill Kristol's theory, Bill Kristol, the Weekly Standard, who said the most likely reason that this is coming out now is that Trump is probably thinking about doing it again now, and that this leak was essentially designed to stop him and to get him to back off, which means that this obviously, this should not be surprised to anybody, this is not over. This is barreling forward, and we really don't know how this is going to end.
It seems to me absolutely obvious to anyone who is not biased, anybody who is an objective viewer of what's gone on the last year and a half, that one, Donald Trump either is guilty of something or believes he's guilty of something. Number two, he would have liked to have fired Mueller. He still would like to fire Mueller. He will do anything to avoid what is coming his way. You know, I'm going to do a side moment here. Watching the people, the experts on television being asked, should Trump agree to be interviewed by Robert Mueller under oath? And all of the experts are saying, oh, no, he shouldn't do that. It's a perjury trap. Don't step into a perjury trap. Hey, you know what? Swearing under oath, sworn testimony, is supposed to be a perjury trap. That's exactly what sworn testimony is. They swear you to tell the truth, and if you don't, it's perjury. It's not a trap that Robert Mueller is laying for this guy. The only trap is if Trump lies, okay? But here's what's going to happen. This thing is barreling forward. In a couple of months, maybe in a year, Robert Mueller is going to either release a report or offer a referral to Congress that is going to include a whole lot of indictments and criminal charges. There's going to be obstruction of justice is going to be one of them. It's going to be one of his conclusions. There may be others, including some form of collusion that may not be the wording he uses, but there's going to probably be some conspiracy to work with the Russians to affect the outcome of a presidential election. This is all going to happen. Donald Trump is not going to be Bill Clinton or Richard Nixon. He is not going to let the system work. Donald Trump is going to fight it. And Kevin Kelton is predicting we are going to have a constitutional crisis, the likes of which we haven't seen in our lifetimes. Not as bad as the Civil War, but there's going to be a lot of stuff that goes down between now and then, and it's going to be very interesting to watch.
All right. So one thing, two things, actually. So who leaked this? I know you guys think – my theory is that the Trump people actually leaked this because he might still fire him. But this was like a test. Like, who might protect him? Or could Trump get away with this and not everyone freak out? Like, yeah, and see, like, maybe he could still do it and get away with it. Like, would everyone freak out about it? Well, it seems like everyone is freaking out about it, and this was just a test about it.
Now, I have a different theory on who leaked this. I think it came out of Mueller's office. I think Mueller has known, probably since 15 minutes after Trump brought up firing him, that went down.
Better.
He's been sitting on this information for a while and let it slip now so that Trump knows that he knows everything and that Trump knows not to perjure himself and to be as honest as he's capable of being when the time comes to interview him.
Well, here's why I'm going to be skeptical of that theory, Rebecca. Obviously, it's a possibility, but I'm a little skeptical because of this. If you're right, if it's a shot across the bow, Mueller trying to tell Trump, hey, I know what goes on in the inner private sanctums of the Oval Office. He'd essentially be telling Trump, don't say anything in the Oval Office that you don't want me to know because I know everything. And I'm not sure he wants to send that signal. So, for what it's worth.
So none of us know anything is what we're
of
saying.
Of course. And especially me.
But I would say in response to what really to what everyone is saying, had Trump kept his mouth shut, Mueller could have only really focused on, you know, whatever Russian interference was involved, and it would have been more outward, and it would have started outward from Russia and Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear and all those other folks. And a lot of Trump's a lot of the Trump organization financial records and a lot of Trump financial records would not necessarily at that moment have been considered relevant. Once Trump did what he did, then the question becomes, okay, is that obstruction or is that not? Well, you have to figure out the intent and you have to figure out the motive of the person who may be doing the obstruction. So we need to figure out what Trump's motives are. And as soon as we need to figure out what Trump's motives are, then everything in his past does become relevant. Because if he has been laundering money for Putin-backed oligarchs, as is one of the theories, that's a motive for obstruction of justice. And Mueller has to investigate and see if that's the case. Donald Trump essentially allowed Mueller, through his Trump's own stupidity and rash behavior, Trump has given Mueller the opening to go into everything about Donald Trump and his family and his organization financially. It's all relevant now. Yeah. Because it is for motive for obstruction.
And that's really a good point, because if there's an additional potential motive of protecting members of his family, that means that Mueller has he's required to look at what Trump's family might have been doing wrong. So that's where he can start cracking into Kushner's records, into Ivanka's records, into Eric and Don Jr.'s records, even though apparently Don Jr. just puts those out on Twitter for all of us to read.
So, DJ, you're on record as having said that the only way Trump is leaving office is if the voters vote him out in 2020. I assume you still believe that?
I still believe that he will not be – I still believe that, which means – but I'm holding to that because I do not believe the votes will ever be there in the United States Senate to convict and remove him from office.
Right. Okay.
I am not so sure about whether or not there will be votes in the House to impeach him. That depends upon the election results of 2008, the election results this November, and whatever information that we do not know now, we do know by January of 2019 or later in 2019.
Right.
Well, what I think is likely is if there are actual criminal charges to be filed against Trump, they will be somehow deferred and until such time as he leaves office. I think there will be some provision somehow put forward that you can't prosecute a sitting president, but this will be hanging over him like a very grim cloud that at the moment he leaves office, he will be prosecuted for whatever financial crimes he's been committing for the past number of decades.
No. I hate to say that if that happens, it would be game open on presidents. And I mean, every president from then on, the moment they leave office, there will be just a flurry of they're going to jail. Someone will find something no matter what, and somehow they will go to jail. I'll disagree with you. I mean, he will be voted out of office. Once again, depending on how these midterm elections and
most presidents don't have a history of or suspicion of money laundering for Russian oligarchs for 30 years.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree. I think
Barack Obama was a money launderer, George W. Bush?
Hold on, Greg. How many presidents have used their vast fortunes as cover for money laundering for criminal elements outside the country? Please name them.
17, and I'm not allowed to. most of them are fraternity brothers of mine. So I
want to go back to Rebecca's prediction because I think it's a fascinating prediction. And again, we're just guessing. I know no more than you, and probably a lot less.
Yeah, none of us are lawyers. We none of us have any background in the law or criminal prosecution or anything. We are just guessing here.
And we're just guessing. But then again, so are the attorneys. So are the professionals.
Yeah, the four of us all received our legal degrees from Social Media U.
Yes. Which is better than Trump U. But I am going to second guess your prediction, Rebecca, because I think that Mueller is going to try to indict the sitting president now. And the reason I predict that is because, you know, if you're a prosecutor and you're investigating this case, that's the slam dunk. That's the all-star team. That's the grand slam home run that I think every prosecutor wants. And why not try it? The worst that can happen is it goes through the courts and you get denied. But I think he is going to make this a test case for history to prove that a sitting president can be indicted and tried. How that's going to turn out, I don't know. But my guess is he's going to attempt to do that.
I don't know. I mean, we are in brand new territory here. There's no precedent for any of this.
Actually, there is.
Of course there is. Of course DJ knows there is. DJ, the walking history book in glasses over here.
Well, no. The fact is we all lived through the precedent. Ken Starr did not attempt to indict Bill Clinton. He presented his findings to Congress. That is probably the closest thing to a precedent we have, and thus that is likely, I think, what Mueller will use. Mueller may be a special prosecutor now, but he is not a prosecutor per se. I mean, he cut his chops as head of the FBI. So there's no guarantee that Mueller
he was a prosecutor.
Like...
Mueller has a very long laundry list of cases that he's prosecuted. The guy put Gambino's in jail. He prosecuted the Lockerbie bombing. He cut his teeth prosecuting, quite literally. But I don't know if that extends to what his duties are now. I haven't read the memo explaining what he's allowed to do and what he's not allowed to do.
That's because I don't think there is a memo on what he's allowed to do and what he's not. But I do think the most likely scenario is that he will treat the Ken Starr investigation as precedent and present his findings to Congress. The question then becomes, if it's a Republican Congress, what will they do with his findings?
That's not a question. The answer is diddly plus squat equals President Trump for four more years or however many years we have left.
Well, like I said, I think there's unless the Democrats gain 18 or 20 seats in the United States Senate, we have President Trump until 2020 anyway. But
right.
It's going to be a question of how for Republicans, it's going to be a question of how much they want to continue to weld themselves to the president. And there was a time when I kept waiting for them to distance themselves from him, and I got so disappointed I left the party. I will continue to be disappointed by the Republicans, I expect, but I won't be surprised by them anymore.
Okay. And I want an impeachment trial, even if he's not convicted. I just want to see it. Because to me, this is all show. Listen, I'm retired.
Yes,
None of this can affect me.
It is all show, but it can be a relevant and important show. If you have a situation, I mean, if the American people get to the point where they genuinely believe that high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed, and you know, 34 or 40 Republican senators choose not to convict Trump and remove him from office, then that is going to be a very large mark against them in the minds of voters in November 2020. There's nothing
wrong.
Yes.
Will it be a mark against them? They all voted affirmatively for a guy who admitted to grabbing pussies on tape. Do you really think money laundering is going to bother them? They don't, you know, most people don't actually know what money laundering consists of, and did it actually hurt anybody? I don't know.
I would humbly submit that there are some Republicans and Republican-leaning independents who, for various reasons, basically closed their eyes and held their nose and voted for Donald Trump. Obviously, it's not something I did. I voted for Mrs. Clinton, as the rest of you did. But they chose to vote for Donald Trump for reasons, you know, ways they could close their eyes and hold their nose. I don't think they'll be able to do that if there is convincing evidence that Donald Trump essentially mortgaged our American interests and American foreign policy to Vladimir Putin. The more I see what is going on here, the more obvious that is. Now, whether that is there is enough of that in terms of criminal behavior to begin an impeachment effort, we don't know yet. At this point, I would be surprised if there isn't enough, but there still isn't enough that we can all see yet because the investigation is ongoing. But either
I'm
way...
Between what Donald Trump personally has done to discredit the idea of collusion and what Fox News and Breitbart and Alex Jones and all the rest have done to back him up, I think there are significant parts of the population who think that everything pertaining to Russia is made up out of whole cloth. And they would know because they have that particular segment of the media has been making stuff up from whole cloth for so long.
Rebecca, as Tom Cruise's character said in Mission Impossible, relax, Luther. It's worse than you think. I actually sadly think large parts of the Republican Party would support and defend collusion with Russia because in their mind, Vladimir Putin is a decent guy. He is an Orthodox Christian. He kills Muslim terrorists in Chechnya. He kills Muslim terrorists in Syria. There are far too many Republicans who I genuinely believe actually like Vladimir Putin. So I don't think it's a matter for them of they're not going to believe collusion. I think a lot of them will end up defending collusion. But I also think for those Republicans and Republican-leaning independents who do not think colluding with Vladimir Putin is a good idea, they will see the defense of colluding with Putin, and many of them will react in shock. And if the Democrats put up a decent candidate, or excuse me, if they put up a candidate who can appeal to those voters, then Donald Trump will be defeated in 2020.
What do you guys think the approval rate for Donald Trump is among Republicans right now?
Oh, it's like 85%, isn't it? 87?
Yeah,
it's in the 80s.
It's 87. It's an 87 by Gallup. It's 81 by Newsweek. It's that high.
Right. But let's remember that Republicans make up 29% of the voting electorate.
It's not the point. The point being, these people are going to overlook. In addition, there's already a smear campaign for, remember, perjury trap, FBI, secret cabal. Wait, that's not
Greg,
it. Secret
Greg,
society.
Greg,
secret society.
I love that.
I understand all of that. I understand that the Trump administration would like us all to believe that the FBI is one gigantic Democratic orgy that is determined to get rid of Donald Trump because he banged Stormy Daniels before any of them could. The fact remains, however, that of the 62 million plus who voted for Donald Trump, there are more than a few and more than enough to make the difference who will be repelled by what I think Mueller will find. And Democrats need to be prepared to find ways to bring them into the fold. That's right. What I am saying. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed.
All right. Agreed. All right.
I think the difference between you and me is I've never been convinced that there is enough evidence to make the collusion case, whereas I do think that there is enough evidence to make a case of financial crimes existing within the Trump empire for many, many years prior to the election, but not necessarily what was going on during the campaign or while he's been in office.
I think unless they get those tax returns, there won't be. And two, I think the only case they'll ever get against him is obstruction of justice.
Okay, well, we've been talking about this for 30 minutes, so let's see what else is going on in the world.
Because it's super interesting. Everyone wants to think about this.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
But not for 30 minutes with us. So.
I don't know. I was at book club the other night, and a couple of my book club members are listeners to the podcast. We were talking about some of this stuff.
Oh, I want to read something to you guys. Hold on. I want to read this to you. I just saw it today on our More Perfect Union podcast page on Facebook. A listener named Brian E. Moore, this is real, a listener named Brian E. Moore said, I just got finished binge listening to episodes 135, 136, and 137. I happened to stumble upon your podcast this week, and I'm now a subscriber. Those were three very funny discussions. Thanks. So we do have some kind of a fan base.
We're funny, too.
I like how you say fan. Fan singular, but okay. Hey, thank you, Brian. The More Perfect Union podcast, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. It's better than staying at home and listening to Michael Bolton. Mostly better.
You know who's losing his fan base? Steve Wynn.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, what can you say, yeah. right?
I remember when I was a kid.
You dreamed of growing up to be a casino owner?
No. I remember when I was a kid turning on Channel 11 for Yankees games, and then later as a teenager taping Star Trek, the original series, on my VCR tapes at midnight and then watching it again the next morning, that there would be these little 30-second ads from Steve Wynn. It would be Steve Wynn himself talking up his casinos,
yeah.
talking up Atlantic City, and everything else. Now, does it really surprise me that he essentially decided that, well, with all my wealth and power, I can use whatever women for my pleasure I want to, whether they want to be a part of it or not? No, that doesn't really surprise me at all, sadly.
How could it surprise anybody? If a Hooters manager would do it, why wouldn't Steve Wynn?
Well, it's not that. And the other thing we have to take in mind, Steve Wynn was one of the RNC heads of...
He was the finance chair. He had an official position within the RNC as a finance chair, and he donated in the millions of dollars to the party and candidates. Plus, he's a bundler, so he was responsible for bringing in untold millions more.
So can we pretty much say he was the Harvey Weinstein of the Republican Party?
Yeah.
Times
that's,
10.
That's all I've heard about is, well, you know, Harvey Weinstein. Here's a picture of Harvey Weinstein, and all he did was bring money into the you Democrats, obviously, and I love being called you Democrats. You Democrats knew Harvey Weinstein, which if you showed me a picture of Harvey Weinstein 2 years ago, I would have said, I don't know who he is. I've heard the name. I was once offered a chance to work on one of his projects when I was in the film and industry, long story, and I turned it down because it was very sketchy. It was called the Real Housewives of Trailer Parks or something like that. I'm not kidding. I'm not making that up.
That sounds kind of awesome.
It was a Weinstein production, and I said it did not because I worked. It's a long story, but I said it didn't make Ohio look good. And he said, and the production company said, that's okay. We can film it in Kentucky. And I said,
oh my
no.
God. That doesn't make it better.
I was going to say, I hate to bring everybody down, but I also wanted to touch on the USA Gymnastics story that broke this year and the conviction of, Dr. Nasser.
Larry Nasser. Dr. Nasser. I've been talking about this with multiple people, including Molly Cooper, who you all may remember from past episodes here, and my mother. And it's shocking to me that a doctor was able to take such advantage of his position, that women and other adults are so ill-informed about what standard medical practice looks like, that he was able to get away with what he did, that adults are so willing to not listen to young women when they say something is wrong. There were failures on so many levels, and my heart breaks for these young girls who just wanted to do the sport they loved, and in so doing, were grievously abused.
You know, and I've seen people in very competitive sports, and their parents really want them to excel, and maybe a little too much, and they ignored, and they had an opportunity to train with the best and be with the best. And when there were warning signs, whether they were, maybe there were more along the way, and I'm not blaming the parents, but there might have been others. You know, there were things ignored, obviously. And it might have been this very competitive atmosphere. Because there was just this, we have to be in this situation, which looking back, no one has to be in that situation. No one has to be put in the hands of a monster for that reason.
Literally in the hands.
I think literally the hands of a monster. And now it's University of Michigan, isn't it? No, it's Michigan University.
State. Michigan State University.
Michigan State. State.
Yeah.
You know, and they're trying to back out, saying, well, you know, the university state shouldn't be held responsible, and I'm sorry that we're getting a bad name out of this. No, you should get Penn State. You know, should
Jerry
be
Sandusky,
salted.
Yeah,
they knew. And, you know, sorry, Michigan State, you
well,
should
the president
have a
of Michigan
giant
State
letter.
Has resigned.
Good.
Over the this. And all the entire Board
resigned.
Of Governors, the athletic director has resigned. Everyone in of the Board of USA Gymnastics has resigned, which was mandated by the International Olympic Committee in order as a contingency upon further competition in world gymnastics. It's you know, everybody is getting cleaned
this?
Out. We're starting that, over. And I think that's correct. That's what should be happening.
I call that a good start.
Yeah.
It won't make these girls whole. It doesn't fix what happened to these women, but it allows us to start again with new blood, with people who are coming into it with their eyes open and who will maybe protect the athletes instead of being willing to put up with anything for a gold medal.
And by the way, this isn't just about, you know, female Olympic athletes. You know, this happens in dance troops. I mean, there was a story about a ballet troupe, I believe one of the New York City-based ballet troupes, where a famous choreographer or dance director was removed recently. And I'm sorry, I'm not being more specific. But it's pervasive. I wish I had something smart to say about it. I don't. This story breaks everyone's heart.
Well, it's anywhere where human beings are treated as a commodity. And there are people in management who are, in essence, buying and selling the talent of individuals. And the talent is always at a disadvantage because they can be blackballed. Management can shut them out. They can be closed out of their profession, out of their calling. And it's so dangerous for people if they don't have the right kind of allies, if they don't have the right kind of backing. And I think about this often when I think about the creative sector unions, the actors union, the writers union, because that's the place where people can go to for protection, where they have union representation, where they have lawyers who can help them when management starts to treat the labor, the talent badly. And I don't know that these girls inside of gymnastics had anything like that, or if they did, that mechanism failed them. It failed them so badly.
And I just want to give those names because I found them now online. Marcelo Gomes, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right. Marcelo Gomes or Gnomes from the American Ballet Theater, one of the world's best known ballet dancers, resigned after he was accused of sexual misconduct. And here's another one. Pete Martins, the longtime leader of the New York City Ballet, has been removed from teaching his weekly classes at the School of American Ballet, while they investigate some accusations of sexual harassment against him. So, you know, what do you say about this stuff? And these are in some cases, Martins is a 71-year-old man. Now, I'm sure that a lot of this stuff happened 10, 15, 20 years ago, but still.
Yeah, maybe even longer than that.
You know what this reminds me of? I was thinking about this afternoon. It reminds me a lot of the reaction that society at large had, or maybe urban society at large had, in the late 70s and 1980s, when cities seemed ungovernable because of rampant crime and rampant criminal behavior. And most cities responded by really dramatically changing the way they chose to govern themselves and the way they chose to look at, or let me phrase it, they changed the way they chose to govern themselves, and they changed their expectations of their local governments. This sort of has the same feeling. We're right now at the stage where more and more of us are being aware of how pervasive that this is, how horrible this is, and we're now approaching the somebody has to do something stage. And the one thing that I take optimism from is that when it came to the rampant crime of the urban rampant crime of the late 70s and early 80s, we largely did something about it, and that was by and large, solved, if you will. It was addressed and it was mitigated, and we were able to move on. It is my hope and my optimistic expectation. It may take, I mean, it took 10 to 15 years back then. I hope it doesn't take that long now till we get to the point where we figure out, okay, what are the things we can do, and then actually do them so that, you know, 53, 54% of our population feels safer than they have up to this point.
Well, I think in the case of gymnastics, if we're still isolating that situation for the purposes of this discussion, all of those victim impact statements provide us a list of candidates for new governance within the USA Gymnastics apparatus. I think any one of those young women would be a valuable asset in creating a new structure that is safer for the athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so moving on to hopefully happier stories. You know what's sad? When turning to
oh my
the
gosh.
Economy of Kansas is actually the happier of two stories.
This was the best week ever for Kansas because their governor's finally gone, Sam Brownback. But it's good news, bad news, because the governor, Sam Brownback, is finally no longer the governor of Kansas. But now he is, wait for it, this is his title, the United States Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom.
At large.
At large, which somehow he puts on like a door, somewhere there's a door with that title, and somehow he has cards that say, "Why, hello, I'm Sam Brownback. I'm the United States Ambassador at Large for the International Religious Freedom, the USAALFIRF. I don't know, which is a ridiculous title. I mean, he's somehow supposed to go around to protect bakers.
He's the religion czar.
He's the religion czar.
Was this a position that existed before the Trump administration? I mean, have there often been ambassadors at large for religious freedom? You know, and were they people who recognized the validity of other religions? Because I don't believe Sam Brownback does. He's like an Opus Dei level, you know, like that super conspiracy Catholic. He's practically Illuminati.
So this position was created by the International Religion Freedom Act of 1998. I know you guys all remember it. And
I was totally sober in 1998. I remember lots of things that happened then.
Same. I've got it on my Religious Freedom Act cards. It comes with a stick of bubble gum. And it's been pretty much held by, you know, like, ridiculous people. But Obama had Rabbi David Saperstein for the position. That's who held it for most of it. And he was the first non-Christian to hold the post. But
Obama breaking barriers.
That's what he do. But the funny thing about Brownback, if you don't know him, he's the guy who in Kansas had the great experiment. You know, we're going to, you know, give tax cuts to the rich and give all these deregulations, and we're going to make Kansas like this utopia.
It was pure supply side economics.
Right. And it totally tanked.
Actually, we won't move on. But
it totally tanked.
It was not that we move on. What I was going to say was I was going to offer a quick dissent and then offer my larger response later. Without attempting to interrupt Greg, which I ended up doing anyway. I apologize, Greg. Please
go
continue.
Ahead, do it. No. Tell us how.
That's
great
not what I'm
going
to say. What I was going to say was that there were numerous things that happened in Kansas that were a bit beyond Governor Brownback's control. Kansas is much more oil dependent than people realize. It was whacked by the reduction in oil prices, and it was not as diverse as, say, Texas, so it couldn't recover from it. Also, some of the spending cuts that were actually required to keep Kansas budget balanced were not enacted at the beginning because the legislature didn't want to do it, and frankly, neither did Governor Brownback. So in a lot of ways, it was more a supply-side caricature, cut taxes and everything will be fine, than an actual supply-side, which is far more complex, but I won't get into that right now.
DJ, I have one hyphenated word for you, killjoy.
Yeah, okay. That's me.
But just as a fun fact, there was a point in time a couple of years ago where there's some sort of arcane law about the sale of sex toys in Kansas. And so a lot of them were seized by the government and they were auctioning them. and the money was going to go into public coffers, but they were auctioning large lots of sex toys under Sam Brownback, who doesn't probably believe in things like sex toys. And I just found that very humorous and wanted to share it all with you.
This is why we have a female on the podcast.
Yes, because I know about things like...
I couldn't get away with that.
I'm a HuffPo reader. That's really where that comes from.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate with a lot more alcohol.
So let's wrap this sucker up. We're not going to be able to touch on everything that's on our rundown, but I want to ask, what are you guys looking for in the State of the Union on Tuesday? I personally will not be watching it. I'll be very happy to read a couple of news summations of it or summaries of it. But what will you be looking for? DJ, I'll start with you.
I'll be looking for it to end.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm not going to listen. I'm actually going to be more curious about what the response is and how the Democrats.
Oh yeah, Joe Kennedy's right, giving
how
the response.
Democrats respond to it. That'll tell me give me a better idea of what strategy they're looking for in 2018. How they look ahead for the various issues. In terms of what Trump will say at the State of the Union, it doesn't matter because whatever he says, half of it will be contradicted by his Twitter account by morning.
Okay, one, I have to take my kids to a rehearsal, but I will be DVRing it. I think everything about it is awesome. I love the State of the Union. I think we find out like everything from as they walk in when the lowly Congress – peasants, I mean people, start asking the president for like autographs. I love that. To where the senators, if they are going to sit like one side Republican or one side Democrat, or if they're going to intermingle, how they stand up, or is it going to be a much more like will they shake their heads and go, no, he lies, or is it going to be much more civil? And I love all of it. I love the show of it. Okay, I think it's going to be awesome. I would really like the Democrats to, you know, not frown and not be like, okay, we're here, we're listening. This is what I would hope. That we're going to listen, and they don't every time a camera pans to like Bernie Sanders, that he doesn't go like put on his old man frown face, go no, 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 or Schumer too. And in fact, they should just be like, okay, we're listening, we're listening, and afterwards. Boom, they should go to Kennedy, and I know Maxine Waters is doing a thing on BET. I'm interested to hear both of them, and I think it should be all positive, and this is what we're going to do, because this is what we're doing for you lately.
And
that's what I'm looking
and
for.
And Rebecca, what are you looking for, and what will you be wearing?
I will No, it's a red carpet question. What he really meant was, who will you be wearing? And the answer is Tarjay.
Yes, thank you. It was, who will you be wearing? And, of course, I knew you would know that. And I knew it was a sexist joke, but I made it anyways.
who will you be wearing? And I, yes. And I was going to make the least sexist reference possible. I will be following in the footsteps of the great Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and not paying any attention to it. She will be on book tour somewhere in the Northeast. I will be reading a book somewhere in my living room.
And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Please look for us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can start following us and listening to us as well. We want to thank Alan Keeney for our new theme music. It's really great. We love it. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Sally. And we want to thank Ian Patrick Shannon for our rockin' new website. If you haven't checked it out yet, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. It's got some great content there, including articles we've written, bios about us, and lots of other fun little Easter eggs that you can find there. And finally, if you like political debate and would like to join us between podcasts, look for us in our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. And last words before we say ta-ta. Who's got one?
I hate Mitch McConnell.
Well, everybody hates Mitch McConnell, but...